Chapter 26. Innocent Lives. It was impossible for me to allow my protagonist to undo what had happened. I had once written Volpe's Lupus Canis to bring order to my mind. My personality was split, consisting of someone who believed, someone who loved, and a third who hoped. I wanted to bring these three parts of my mind together, to connect them, to put them in order. This could not be jeopardized under any circumstances. I made a mistake when I let my children experience their world and then explained to them that it consisted of images that were not real. Of course, this threw them into an existential crisis. While I could empathize with them, I saw no other way of healing myself. When I had read the last lines of the 25th chapter carefully, the question came over me whether I had not acted egotistically and arrogantly. Joliad, Amarok and Chenra were, at least for a long time, only the names of three players. The fate of each one made me live new experiences, complete a part of my life, and gain understanding. The price was high. Even if Chenra, the last of them, could not understand, I didn't just murder them. Nor was it that their loss was easy for me. As I had already written at the beginning of my work, the beginning of every idea already presupposed its end. I knew that, only my dog did not yet. Brooding, I did not dare to open chapter 26 at first, because I was in a dilemma. On the one hand, I was aware that my German shepherd had to die, too, in order to achieve my spiritual healing. On the other, I wished that there had been an alternative solution to everything. Couldn't I have at least kept him? Seriously, I thought about it, if his part was missing from my spirit, I would be left with faith and love. But what was I to do with them without hope? Then it occurred to me, even if that had been possible, he would have done everything to save his deceased friends. He would never have been able and willing to live in harmony with me without the other two Anthros by his side. I also sensed his despair. Even the mother wolf of all was not of the opinion that he could have changed something that, which had already happened. Slowly, even he, this defiant dog, understood that there was a fate from which he could not escape. For me, the worst part of it was, I could not find a solution that could do justice to what were for me new, unexpectedly created conditions. Writing Volpe's Lupus Canis had made me experience his life, feel his presence, perceive his feelings. He impressed me, and yet it was so much more. No man had ever, as long as I could remember, managed to come so close to me. True, in years past I had relationships with other people, had sometimes been partnered, but one thing I could now say with certainty, Chenra Gejaz was the name of the most significant man ever in my life. No friend, husband, brother or father could be what he was, could not achieve what he was capable of. This dog not only had all my attention, but won my heart. I had never known anyone to whom I owed my life and would have laid it at his feet at any time. I sighed loudly and turned the page so I could continue reading, lost in thought. Chenra walked on and continued his way to the Khufu Pyramid. He smiled as he remembered that in the history of his life, Arya, or Ianaya, as the Alsatians called her, was always the being who had wisdom to give away. Now he felt he knew everything about himself. He had sprung from the pen of his maker, but he had always kept the most important information of them being together to himself. Perhaps everything that happened here belonged to a great teaching of his creator, who, now finally, tried to pass it on to the soldier. The shepherd ran for a whole day before coming to another village. It was an oasis. So he could fill up his drinking tube and wet his fur with the cold water of a well. Ah, does that feel good? He sighed as a few villagers watched him. As he stood there dripping wet and wanted to continue his way, he was discovered by two Roman soldiers who ran towards him shouting loudly. Then the male remembered that he had previously fought against subordinates of the minister, had killed them and that this could still have consequences for him, whether a god or not. So far, he had not been detected because he had not been in populated areas. That was apparently about to change. Oh, don't. The dog thought to himself and took off running. A chase began between two warriors armed with lances and swords and the supposed god. As fast as he could, Chenra ran past huts and tents, accompanied by Latin shouts from his rivals, who did not manage to catch up with him. One of the Romans stopped and shot arrows into the air with his bow, narrowly missing the fleeing man. The second Roman continued to run after the dog, arrows ricocheting off house walls and shattering large clay pots. Chenra snorted, dashed around corners, and accidentally rammed into several passers-by who dropped water jugs, heavy fruit, and stacks of logs. They cursed in ancient Egyptian, having nothing to do with any of this. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Sorry. He shouted. A lot of sand was stirred up and took the pursuers of the male to view. Desperate, they stopped and one of them hurled his spear indiscriminately through the clouds of dust in an attempt to catch the culprit. But even this failed. The staff hit a haystack, which startled some chickens and made them run cackling indiscriminately through the area. Some angry Tamrians ran up to the gunmen and complained loudly, pointing to their lost goods and harassing them. My protagonist successfully used this opportunity to take refuge in a small building whose door was open. He quickly closed it and breathed hastily. With this, it was clear that the minister had him searched for, and the dog now had a powerful enemy that he was never allowed to meet. A few escaped him when he encountered a young woman in the dwelling who looked shaken, frightened. She dropped a clay pot, which shattered into many small pieces on the floor, clinking. "Oh," he spoke hastily, "I'm sorry. I didn't mean to just barge in here. I am Chenra. I've been followed. There are these two soldiers trying to pull the wool over my eyes. They shot at me with arrows, and threw spears." The woman did not answer, but continued to stare and stood petrified, still holding her hands as if the vessel were still in her hands. Chenra realized and sighed, "You probably don't understand what I'm saying, do you?" Then he lowered his body to the ground so that he could catch his breath, his back blocking the door. He remembered that he could understand the language of the Egyptians in the temple of Yenebian. Why shouldn't he try to speak it himself? So he tried to tell in a few syllables what had just happened. However, his Arabic was so bad and choppy that it only elicited a smile from the woman. When the mysterious, strange god stood up again, waving his arms so that it looked like a silly dance, she started to laugh and bent her body. He pointed to himself and kept saying his name, "Me, Chenra Ra." Then the woman laughed even louder. Immediately the dog stopped his posturing and looked embarrassed. As the gudgeon slowly calmed down, she spoke with an accent, "All is well, Lord. I understand your language. I would have liked to watch your dance longer, but I think you need a drink of water." She offered her counterpart a seat, and when they were both seated, Chenra thanked her for being hospitable to him without knowing him. When the Tamrian had taken a sip, she indicated to the male that she, too, was not very fond of the presence of the Roman legionaries. "I can well imagine that you have problems with them. Ptolemy has turned against you gods. He requires everyone to turn you in or report your appearance." The dog nodded, "Yes, that's right. A man I trusted did just that, even though he pretended to be on Cleopatra's side. He's lucky I haven't seen him again so far." "Yes, this country is in upheaval," she confirmed. "A long-running power struggle between two very powerful people. Each has his own entourage, his own soldiers and weapons. But the people want peace. Isn't it enough that Tamari has to deal with feeding so many strangers? Greeks are one thing, but Romans. Lousy occupiers." Her brown eyes revealed a mixture of anger and despair. These feelings seemed serious to the Alsatian. Still, he did not immediately trust the woman until she explained her intentions. "I am Yanara, daughter of Nagib, the last Mejau of Tamari. As once my father, I am loyal to the house of the true kings and to their gods. I serve the god queen and you, noble lord." Abruptly, the lady jumped up, stepped back behind her seat, and pulled out a shiny sword from under her inconspicuous cloth garment. Chenra, startled, also stood up quickly, reflexively drew Tutankhaten's dagger and tensed his muscles in a fighting pose. When he saw that the woman, however, pointed the tip of her weapon downward rather than upward and went down on her knees, he realized, this Egyptian woman meant what she said, and she was in the service of the old gods. The sheepdog relaxed and asked her to stand up again. "I am not one to seek your courage and strength, Yanara," he spoke soothingly. "In fact, I'm not even a god. I just stumbled into this door by accident and had no intentions except to find protection. I always fight alone and don't want to involve anyone in arguments." The earthling stood up again and then hid her blade under the cloth she was wearing. "Whether you think you are a god or not, I know your lineage and I also stand by the lost and the outcast. It is my duty, the duty of my clan. As I can see from your weapon and armor, you are well equipped anyway. You also don't look like someone who would have a reason to fear. If you do not need my help in battle, dog god, then perhaps I will be able to help you in some other way. Whatever it is, if I can help your cause, let me know." Gay Jay's thought for a moment, surely Yanara would be able to help him make the way to the pyramid more bearable. Maybe she had a camel, or contacts to someone with one. Maybe there is something there. But say, how come you hide a weapon under your clothes? He asked. She explained, it is not easy for us women in Tamari. Although we are allowed to hold offices, to move freely, some men are rude animals and give nothing for respect. Since I was trained in combat by my father, I use my skills and always know how to defend myself. Impressed, the Alsatian nodded, after which Yanara went to the door, opened it a crack, and peered scrutinizingly. I guess they're gone, she spoke and opened. Are you sure? Yes, she confirmed, it's all quiet. Come along, but let's keep our eyes open. They're not giving up anytime soon. They stepped outside and the Egyptian offered to show the stranger her village and provide assistance if he needed it. He would only have to tell how. As long as you don't run into Romans, she began, you're safe here. Here, in HRDJ, they come very rarely. You will look in vain for the troops of Ptolemy and Cleopatra here. Roman soldiers always side with the one who pays them better. The inhabitants of this village are very peace-loving and do not interfere in foreign affairs. You will not have to fear being extradited. What was the name of the man who betrayed you? While they walked through the sand, the male dog looked at the dwellings overgrown with vines and felt this place as quiet, relaxed, but also impoverished and charming. One apparently liked to decorate one's home with what this oasis had to offer. Unlike in Yenebaean, where the house walls were bare and sanded, here they seemed unfinished, primitive, much greener. The villagers had little, but made the best of it. What one possessed, one had to use only meaningfully and would not need what was lacking at all, so the shepherd dog thought. His name is Elioni, he then replied. If I ever run across him again, I swear I will be merciless. The Egyptian woman, who was a head shorter than him, looked up at him walking. This god, she felt, looked very unusual. He must be a relative of Yanapu, but he had a different face from him. Wherever he came from, he made a very masculine, strong and unshakable impression on her. A very handsome man, you could tell that what he said was serious and important. Elioni? She inquired. It's strange that he betrayed you. After all, his name means he's supposed to be a helpful man. Oh, is that so? I think he was already very helpful. Only he didn't serve me, but his patron Ptolemy. I was wrong about him. He said that Cleopatra was the real queen. Apparently he wanted me to believe that he belonged to the good side. It was all about money. What else would it be about? The human woman nodded, yes, unfortunately it is money that makes many people forget about friendship and peace. Here, in my village, where gold and silver coins are not needed, it is still like before. You will see. A village where money was not needed, that sounded like an idea of the writer of the Vulpes Lupus Canis. Aramaria also did not know any monetary system in the Jagranates outside the capital Bolmer. It was also strange that the language Latin was taught in the academies of free thought, although it was not spoken on Alpha, Vol. They strolled along between huts, in front of which a few children were playing with stones in the yellow sand. They had enclosed a playing field by lines, flicked pebbles, laughed, and talked in squeaky voices. Yanara stopped and pointed at the boys and girls. At this age, people are all the same. Boy or girl, tall, short, fat or thin, they are all happy and content. All they have are the stones, the sand and themselves. And that is enough for them. Their clothes are simple, functional. This is how most people in this country have always lived. But slowly foreigners are flooding this country, bringing bad habits, different languages and unhealthy food. This can't be good for the people, can it, Chenra? The Alsatian looked thoughtful, understanding that it was all too human to see or even establish differences between himself and others. It was not something that humans and anthros did from birth. It was because of their aging, their experiences, and their upbringing that valuing others would become part of their lives. The playmates ignored the adults, who now continued walking until they came to a small, quiet lake surrounded by lots of greenery. It looks so different here, Chenra remarked, puzzled. How can that be? Admittedly, I've never seen an oasis before. Where I come from, they don't exist. A few steps prior, they were still standing in the desert sand. Now, however, Grass opened up under their feet in places. Bushes and small trees grew here, and it was cooler than at the entrance to the village. Yanara smiled, "We are still in my village, still in Tamari. Travelers perceive my land as a dry wasteland, thinking it is dreary, hopeless everywhere. But as you can see here, dog god Chenra, it is not so. Hope is everywhere, like a lake in the middle of the desert." The dog looked around and remarked that it was very quiet in this place. His companion nodded and explained, "It's because people around us are busy. They go about the things they are told to do, have no time for relaxation and rest. However, they could learn so much truth here than anywhere else in this village. I, too, am pursuing a vocation, herding goats from one place to another." Again the Alsatian had a thoughtful look, gazed into the distance, and mused in a whisper, "The only truth of this world is in its silence." I stopped reading, looked up from the paper pages and smiled, "Exactly, Chenra. It's the same everywhere, because whether you're in the now, whether you're in the before, in the here or there, the truths are the same universal values, regardless of the place or time. Most people have forgotten what really matters in life. I hope you've understood it from the beginning. Unfortunately, I myself had only realized very late that this contemplation was important. But since I had very little time left, I caught up with the feeling of inner peace in the form of the canid. And by writing my story, perhaps one day I would share my experience with others. Well, Chenra, what is your purpose? Why have you come to my village? Are you looking for this Elioni and want to take your rightful revenge on him? I know some people. Perhaps he can be located." "No," he then replied, "I don't want that. Until a few moments ago, I was full of hate and imagined what I would do to this man if I found him. But now that you have shown me this lake, my mind feels much calmer again. I simply don't care about him. One day he will receive his rightful punishment. At the latest, when he stands before Anubis." Yanara had a surprised look in her eyes. "Then you want to let it go? He certainly deserves your wrath after all he's done, doesn't he? If you hadn't escaped the minister, you wouldn't be here. Aren't you going to use your newfound life to demand justice?" "I realize," her counterpart elaborated, "that it doesn't matter what he does as a person. There will certainly be consequences. But it's not up to me to inflict them on him. I think the gods will do that eventually. I am on my way to the Pyramid of Khufu in Giza and would like to attend the ceremony. Can you help me speed up the journey?" As they continued on their way, the Egyptian confirmed, "The ceremony? I see. It is my honor to serve you, Chenra. Your values are noble and your mission is very important if you want to save yourself before Tamari and the world break. You should hurry, for two storms are coming. One of them is made of sand, the other of perdition." Then suddenly she whistled loudly and out of the blue a camel came running. "What the? This is Senyu, my friend. She always stays near me, always loaded with water and other supplies. Senyu will lead you to the tomb of Khufu. Whenever you want to send her home, do so. She will find her way back. Some people think animals do not understand what they are told. But Senyu has proved me wrong very many times." "Wow!" marveled Gejaz. "That's more than generous. I thank you, Yanara. I promise you that she will come back to you in one piece. And you think it's enough for me to tell her to go home?" While patting the animal gently on its flank, the woman confirmed, "Exactly. Senyu and I have traveled many paths together. She will stand by your side, wandering tirelessly. I sense that you will be good to her. There is no violence in your eyes toward the innocent." "Of course I will. I give you my word of honor on that, too. While I haven't had the pleasure of owning a camel myself, I think Senyu and I can work it out. Are you sure you don't want me to come?" she then asked. The Kisar shook his head, "You are safe here. They are not looking for you, because you are more innocent than I am. Besides, the henchmen of the Child King and the minister do not know that I was with you. I don't want anything to happen to you. I do not know the dangers on the way, but I will be able to face them alone. Stay in your village as Meijiao and defend it against your occupiers." "Then so be it," Yanara agreed. "Senyu will help you find your way, make it more pleasant and faster. Do not be deterred. May the gods help you to pass on your light and not let the night enter your heart." The dog nodded. "So, my girl," Yanara spoke to her mount, Take our friend to Giza, do you hear? A soft gurgle from the animal signaled that it had understood. I will do my best. Thank you for your hospitality and wisdom, the male ended the conversation, swung himself onto the camel and continued his journey. Fixing the reins with his left hand, the sovereign held Pharaoh's dagger with his right. After all, he thought to himself, you could never know who or what you might encounter. Criminals could be waiting behind every rock, near every waterhole, dangerous animals could be grazing or worse. Curious, he looked around and looked now and then in the direction of the sky, where carrion birds were circling. The sun burned, dazzled, knew no mercy. Fortunately, Yanara had Senyu packed with several water hoses, because the wet commodity was extremely valuable here in the wasteland that would not end, much more valuable than anything else the sheepdog carried. Any right-thinking person would have tried to mug him, in the absence of water, and not because he was craving anything else. In a moment, Chenra looked to his right and had the feeling that he had seen something move. But he told himself that the light had played a trick on him. In order not to get tired, the dog looked for distraction. First he whistled soft songs, then he sang some. They were almost exclusively in Alsatian and told of great exploits, unity of the tribes of the land, love of beautiful women and victory over evil. Since the male dog now felt unobserved, he sang some passages a little louder, but did not always manage to hit all the notes. So one or the other piece, which he sang the best he could, sounded like the distorted howling of a wolf. That he could not sing, he knew, but also that it would not bother anyone here. As if Senyu would tune in, she murmured and gurgled now and then. Whether she did this for reasons of protest or whether she wanted to sing along was not clear to the performer. But it bothered me, as I read on, his wry delivery pierced my head. This dog had a very masculine, dark, calm voice. That was how I had thought it up. He would have been an excellent storyteller, but he was absolutely not suited for singing. It didn't matter whether I liked his language, knew the melodies or could even have sung the pieces better myself. When I imagined I could hear him doing this, I got a nasty headache and could no longer continue reading with concentration. So I grabbed my forehead and whispered, "Ouch, Chenra. Please don't do this to me. Please." I put the book aside and sighed loudly before pressing a button above my bedside console that would call a nurse. I now urgently needed a painkiller. As if my protege had noticed this, he stopped singing, drank a sip of water and told Senyu about himself and his mission, "Well, my dear, now we are riding through the area. Not very nice here, but at least it's warm. Good thing you don't have to live on Alpha Vol. Some winters are really bad there. But so much sand can't be good for you. It must be stressful and exhausting. Your mistress is a very nice lady. It's nice that she supports me in this." The camel pinched its nostrils and eyelids as a slight gust of wind sent a few grains of sand whirling through the air. A soft, approving gurgle followed. The dog continued, "You must know that I am very grateful to you. You helped me a lot to get to the pyramids in time. I have to see how I can break the opening of the connection between Gaja and Alpha Vol. You won't be able to do anything with this, but bad things have happened, you know? I made mistakes that I'd like to take back and make amends for. I don't know how it worked, but I'm actually here today, long back in time, to undo everything. I wonder if I can really change anything. I don't know. One person says yes, another says no. I just think to myself, I'm going to try anyway." Then he sighed briefly, pulled a piece of jerky from under Senyu's saddle and ate. "I really enjoy touring your towns and villages, would love to learn more about your country and its history, but unfortunately I don't have the time. And between you and me, the heat really makes Tamari uninhabitable for me. Phew. How can anyone live here?" Silence followed. Again the dog felt watched, with Senyu trotting quietly, her hooves sinking into the sand step by step and emerging again. "While I don't know what yet, something is not right here," Chenra thought, looking around again. Despite this heightened awareness, he did not notice a trio of Tamarians skulking around behind the rocks, watching him. The men were armed with scimitars, bows, and swords. They skillfully weaved from rock to rock, running silently through the yellow sand. He tried to use his hearing and turned his ears in all directions. However, the strengthening wind made hearing difficult. His senses had been enhanced, but they could not penetrate all the vagaries. With his eyes closed, the male concentrated on the sounds of his surroundings, breathing deeply through his nose, but but only the rustling of the wind could be heard. He could not smell anything out of the ordinary because of the dry air that was randomly swirling around. "Damn it," he lamented in his mind. "What good is all this animal stuff if I can't use it here?" As the wind grew stronger, carrying more and more sand with it, visibility became increasingly poor. "Yes, my protagonist spoke to Senyu, your mistress was probably right. There's a storm coming and we should start looking for shelter. It looks like Judgment Day over there on the horizon." They rode on and after a short time found a larger cave. Attaching the reins to a bush just inside the entrance, the anthro instructed the animal to lie down. As a camel, he knew, Senyu should be able to withstand the coming amounts of sand, especially since she was half inside the shelter. She could close her nostrils and eyes and would be well protected. "So, my good one," Chenra spoke in a calm voice, Senyu grumbling in a relaxed manner. "While you rest, I'll keep watch. The storm should pass quickly. You won't run away yet." He sat a few steps deeper into the cave so he could keep an eye on the entrance. "That's as far as I'm going to go in for once," he whispered. "We don't want to disturb anyone unnecessarily." The storm set in and nothing was visible outside except a yellow wall consisting of sand, fine branches and dried leaves. The wind whistled loud and strong and a conversation could not have been held here. His companion had lowered her head and turned toward the inside of the shelter. She looked so relaxed, as if enduring a storm was an everyday business for her. Very impressed by this, the male dog looked at the scenery as if hypnotized. He had resolved to stay awake, but slowly his eyes began to fall shut. His eyelids became heavy and again his body twitched so that he could stay awake. But it didn't help for long, because eventually microsleep set in. Chenra's head dropped several times, whereupon he was startled again, blinked, and started the game all over again. Then suddenly he let himself fall to the side and was overcome by fatigue. The sleep was dreamless and short this time. However, Gajaz did not have time to wake up properly. During his nap, the three Tamrians had crept into the cave unnoticed. The men had fought their way through the storm and had been on the Alsatian's heels for quite a while. He had already sensed this, but dismissed it as a misperception, which would now prove to be a mistake. When a leather shoe accidentally stepped on a small stone and it crumbled, the sovereign was jolted out of his sleep. He was startled, opened his eyes and reflexively flapped his arms. Since he had held his dagger in his right hand for safety, he hit one of the men on his hand with it. He shouted out in Arabic and backed away, which his cronies did likewise. Still drowsy, Chenra jumped up and quickly got himself into a crouched fighting position. "What do you want from me?" he shouted, watching the men, also realizing that the sandstorm had passed by now. The robbers were wrapped in tattered, dirty linen, their faces unrecognizable. Bandaged like living mummies, they stood around the dog and surrounded it. They too were ready to strike at any moment, as soon as an opportunity would present itself. One of the men replied in Chenra's language, "We have been watching you. You have a lot of food and water with you. Your dagger and breastplate look valuable. There will certainly be a lot of money for it. A real stroke of luck that will be worth the effort. Well, I don't think you'll get my items that easily. You'll have to go to a lot more trouble for that," Chenra said, pursing his lips. The supposed leader of the three grinned maliciously and said, "You are alone, there are three of us. Make it easy on yourself and give us what we ask for. No one has to endure any more injuries. We are not murderers. But if you don't give us what you have with you, we'll forget our honor pretty quickly." "So? Am I not a god for you?" asked the offended one, because after all he had experienced some situations in which the Tamrians thought he was one. Apparently that was not the case here, because the men did not give the impression of feeling fear or respect. They had to be desperate. After all, they seemed to want to put themselves in danger for some water and food. The protector had no sentimental value for them and the dagger of Tutankhaten would serve them not as a weapon but as lucrative booty. "Ha!" laughed another of the trio. "A god? We know you can die. Who in their right mind believes in gods these days? If we cut you, you'll bleed. So, you can die, too." "You don't say," spoke Chenra. "The same is true for you. I warn you, you'll see what I'm capable of withstanding. You won't be the first to get your asses kicked." "Enough talk," the leader shouted, pulling his saber from its scabbard. Then began an unequal fight, because the male had only the short dagger with him, so also had to fight this dispute with hands and paws. When the first attacker came at him, he immediately managed to stab him in the side, but also had to take punches to the lips. They burst open and bled, but that didn't stop him from throwing punches and kicks as well. He managed to kick one of his opponents in the stomach area, so that he was thrown out through the cave entrance. The other two managed to grab Chenra by his arms and hold him down. Turning to the third man, they shouted, "It's your turn. He's yours. Get up and beat him to a pulp." He quickly stood up, ran towards the dog and hit him with full force in front of his muzzle, so that there was a loud bang and Gajay's almost lost consciousness for a moment. The blood from his lips splattered against the wall of the cave and he groaned as a few more blows followed. The Arab put his saber to his neck and threatened, "Well, what do you say now? We are not really the kind of people who stab someone. But in your case we would make an exception. Choose your fate, you mutt." He pressed the blade a little harder against the throat, creating a superficial wound and turning the fur red. It was not possible for the male to free himself. One thing you had to hand it to the Gajans, they always knew how to make themselves heard by force. The men were unyielding and Gajay's felt that their muscles, despite his counter-pressure, did not want to weaken. He paused for a moment, tasting the metallic taste of his blood as his heated lips throbbed and felt swollen. "Well," asked one of the men holding him, "what do you say, dog? Wouldn't you rather give up?" It was clear to the Alsatian that if he surrendered, they would rob him and probably kill him anyway. Besides, giving up was out of the question under any circumstances. So he gathered his blood in the catch and waited another moment, watched by the leader, whose blade had created a burning, but not deep, cut. The menacing Gajan's expectant brown eyes quickly closed, as Chenra suddenly spat all the collected blood from his muzzle into his face. Immediately the man backed away, yelled out and rubbed the liquid from his eyes, the other two loosening their grip somewhat in shock. The Kisar took advantage of this and released his arms from the predicament. Again he fought with them, dealt blows and reached the shoulder of one of the attackers with his jaws and sharp teeth. Immediately he bit down with a snarl and tore a large piece of flesh from his body. The thief screamed, tore open his mouth, and threw his head back as his blood spurted and covered the affected half of his body in deep red. He sank to the ground, yowling and writhing in pain. Gajay's turned to the other man and glared at him doggedly, noting the taste of human flesh he was now spitting out. His deep voice spoke grumbling, "You humans just taste disgusting." The canine fang bore red-stained fangs, which the thief was terrified to face. Nevertheless, he was brave, raised his sword and swung it skillfully at his adversary. Gajay's was able to dodge all the blows except one. However, this hit the protector and made the Gajan weapon ricochet with a clang. The earthling then staggered, allowing the Alsatian sovereign to kick one of his legs. The man fell against a rock wall and came to rest in the sand. Reflexively, he threw his arms protectively in front of his face, dropping the silver blade and shouting out a pleading-sounding Arabic chant. "Yes, beg for mercy," ruled Chenra, out of his mind. He snorted doggedly, bent over the human who had opened his eyes, and rammed his open jaws across his face. Flailing wildly, the Gajan could only endure the excruciating pain of the bite that would not kill him instantly, and Chenra clenched his eyelids and jaws, feeling the warm wetness against his lips. More and more of the deep red liquid leaked from the head of the underdog, changing its color and creating a pool under the body. Like a wild animal, the dog bit down even harder and began to toss his head back and forth. He felt like a wolf trying to kill its prey by breaking its neck. It was impossible for the Alsatian to lift the weight of the man's body like that, but the violent shaking served its purpose and a loud crackling sound, which pierced even the man's screams, echoed in the cave. The last twitches died away and the tense posture of the Tamrian turned into relaxation. A lifeless heap, drenched in blood and with its face torn open beyond recognition, remained. As the male was about to turn away and the adrenaline was slowly wearing off, he heard a squealing yelp and turned around in a flash after it. He had to realize that the leader of the group, whom he had spat in the face earlier, had picked himself up again and pulled his crooked blade through Senyu's neck. His eyes snapped open as he understood that the Gajan, whom he had lost sight of because of the fight, was killing the camel. A fountain of blood gushed from the gurgling neck and the animal's legs twitched wildly until they fell silent after only a few seconds. "Senyu." The shepherd dog was still calling. "No, Senyu." But it was too late, the fountain ebbed away, The body no longer moved and seemed as if it instantly turned to stone. It was almost palpable how the spirit of life left its dwelling and the cold entered the torso of the mount. The dog's hands trembled as the murderer stood up again and turned away from the hoofed animal's neck. Slowly, the dog put away his dagger and reached for the sword that had fallen to the ground earlier. He did not avert his eyes from the leader as he walked towards him. "You should have listened to us, dog." The human spoke, panting with strain. "You brought this on yourself. If you had given us your supplies right away, it wouldn't have come to this." The man grinned, seemed tense and pulled the rags from his head, so that his face became recognizable. Still smeared with blood, but also wet with sweat, the robber's face stared at the canine soldier, who slowly rose and picked up the shining sword. The male boiled with rage, his knees shook and his muscles tensed again. He looked angry and dogged, breathing deeply and loudly. What had happened, he thought. This person would now atone for it. The Alsatian growled loudly, jumped forward and swung his blade, but the human was able to avoid it. The latter, in turn, dealt a powerful blow to the male's breastplate, which, however, remained ineffective this time as well and was unable to inflict a scratch on the garment. The opponents stood close to each other, pausing, as Gajay's remarked, "Even your weapon won't penetrate this armor." "None can." "I can see that," he got in reply, "but I also know that this armor can't protect your whole body." With a nimble movement, the human backed away, lunged, and gave Chenra a cut in the pant leg of his left thigh. The dog was startled but not injured. First he looked puzzled at his leg, then he fixated on his opponent again. Again, he growled and showed his fangs. "You wouldn't have it any other way, human." Promptly, the two began a sword fight and clashed blades. Not only the dog, who had long trained in the art of sword fighting many years ago, but also his opponent knew how to move quickly and precisely, dodge and handle the weapon well. It seemed that the thief was equal to the Alsatian, and so both blades sometimes missed their respective targets by a hair's breadth. The spectacle, alternating weapons and fists, lasted a while until they pressed their swords together, clasped each other, and their heads almost touched. When the Tamrian saw the rage-filled eyes of his opponent, looked deep into them, he had the feeling for a moment to see in them blazing flames, violence, pain and death. The thoughts of Kisar that he had at that moment became apparent. Images of the Battle of the Alsatians against the human invaders on Alpha Vol from many years ago opened up. Scenes of fighting, dying Gajans and dogs, seemingly endless blood, despair, destruction and explosions were visible. The dog's anger towards man culminated in his violent expulsion. The large spaceship of the Aramarans was also visible, but the Earthling did not know what kind of flying object it was. It was an image from the future that the man could not relate to, which is why his facial expression changed into a frightened one. When the images ended abruptly, he asked with a choppy gasp, "Wh, who are you, dog? I see things in your eyes I've never seen before. What do they mean? What magic is this?" It was clear to the male what exactly the thief meant, and so he spoke strained, "Also in the future we will not negotiate with you humans. Never. My country does not negotiate with terrorists." Not understanding this statement, the opponent's grip loosened, whereupon Chenra was able to push him away, causing him to stumble backwards a few steps. Seizing the opportunity, the dog leapt forward and delivered a long cut to the human's stomach, causing him to scream out, fall over and wriggle. He tried to escape by crawling through the cave towards the exit. The thief had lost the fight and wanted to flee, but his adversary could not let that happen. A few meters he ran slowly behind the writhing body, looked down condescendingly to the underdog and calmly wiped the wet sword clean with the scraps of linen he wore on his body. The male dog spat on the ground to get rid of the blood in his muzzle and put the captured weapon on his leather belt. A few more steps he ran after the human, who left a wide trail of blood in the sand on his way. Then he bent down and forcibly turned the man's body over so that he could look at it. The abdomen was stained with blood, and with each heartbeat it spurted blood out of it. Whimpering, he pleaded, "Please, my lord, let me live. Forgive me. Please, please." Trembling, he protected his face with his arms, but the dog soldier had no pity for him. On the contrary, he enjoyed the sight of the whimpering, trembling Gajan, whom he had beaten in the fight man against dog. His breathing became calm and he looked at Senyu one more time. Then he knelt over the human body and came very close to its tear-soaked face with his muzzle. As a gesture of contempt, He stuck out his blood-red tongue and slowly licked the leader of the trio across his left cheek. The taste of salty tears mixed with ferruginous blood spread on his tongue, arousing him again in rage. "For doing this to this innocent animal, I will make you suffer," he whispered, grinning wickedly. It could not be that a creature like him could harm an innocent, uninvolved and good-natured animal with impunity. So the shepherd dog took extensive revenge on him, lowered his head and took his skull between his hands. He placed the man's oracle between his front teeth. The gudgeon squinted his eyes and had no chance of resistance as the anthro slowly bit down and gradually increased the pressure on the man's ear. Increasing pressure and the cracking of cartilage next to the penetration of flesh and blood. A long-drawn scream at the top of his lungs escaped from the human, who tried to push the canine creature off his body, but was unsuccessful. Then, the kisar had bitten off the ear and spat it into the sand beside him, the lamentation died away. The pain had been too much for the human body and so the confrontation ended with a no longer moving enemy who had opened his eyes and was staring lifelessly at the sky. Chenra stood up and staggered for a moment as his aggression gave way to exhaustion. He sighed, groaned in sympathy, and sat with his back leaning against the dead camel. "Senyu," he spoke, "I am sorry that I could not protect you. Poor girl. I was careless. I am so infinitely sorry." Then tears filled the canine's eyes. However, it was not only the loss of an innocent life that made him sad, but also the fear of not reaching the desired goal in time. For a moment Chenra had almost given up hope, cowering in the cave and staring thoughtlessly into space, when he remembered the experiences from the visions concerning the architect's apartment fire. Images of this appeared in his mind's eye, including the moment when his maker cowered hopelessly in a corner. He lifted its chin and said, "Not today." That made his mind clear up again, made him open his eyes again. He gave himself courage and thought about the fact that it was he who gave his own creator the courage to successfully master a hopeless situation. "Yes, exactly. Not today. Today is not abandoned," Gajay's pronounced loudly, stood up and took water hoses and dried meat from Senyu's saddle. Gently, he patted the animal thoughtfully and placed a gentle kiss on its fur. "I'm sorry, Senyu, but I have to move on. May the gods show you the way to paradise. You deserve it, even more than I do," said the male, who, though still sad, had now regained inner strength. Before he wanted to leave, he followed a degrading custom of the Alsatians concerning beaten enemies, placed in front of the body of the leader of the thieves. The dog pulled his linen trousers down a little at the crotch and emptied his bladder on him. Seriously, he looked down, aimed with the urine stream conscientiously, so that he evenly covered the whole mountain of meat in salty wetness. "This," he said, "is how my people treat the defeated. And that does it very, very good." As he left, he looked into the cave one last time at the bodies of the dead thieves and spat contemptuously on the ground. "And may you burn in the eternal flames of all punishments, you vile butchers. If you meet Anubis, greet him beautifully from me."